Life News Radio.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Produced by Ave Maria Radio and broadcast through the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Catholic Connection, always an honor and a blessing to speak to our shepherds and invite them on the radio. It's always just fun to see what they're up to and how they're doing their best to be light in a very dark world, a very actually post-Christian world in many ways. And it's really neat to see the Church utilizing the social media as a means of evangelization. Of course, the Holy Father, as we mentioned during the news, has a Twitter account. He'll make his first tweet next Wednesday on the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. He already has close to a million followers that have signed up for the tweets. And Bishop Kevin Rhodes of the Diocese of Fort Wayne is on the phone with us right now, and he, too, is taking advantage of the social media to make a difference in our faith. Good morning. You don't have a million people following you yet, though, do you?
No, Teresa. Thanks be to God.
Oh, come on. You're a pretty popular guy.
No, I'm very happy with here in the Diocese of Fort Wayne South, and, you know, we're trying to use the new media, especially during this year of faith, and to promote the new evangelization. So it's an exciting challenge.
Now, you've got some new things going on in terms of a Year of Faith app and blog, correct?
That's right. Yeah, some of the directors here in my chancery, some of the young people who work for the diocese are very much into the new media, the social media, and they've been teaching me a lot. And they proposed this idea of having a My Year of Faith app and blog on website, and they know much more about how to do this than I do, but they've done a beautiful job, and it's become very popular. And I'm really, you know, happy because really the Church, the Holy Father, even the recent Synod of Bishops talked about the new evangelization, we need to pay attention to the world of social communication, especially the new media. And so we're trying, and I think it's really a new opportunity of proclaiming the gospel and teaching the faith in a new format, in a new, you know, through this media.
Now, I'm looking at your website, and do you link on the Year of Faith icon there? Is that where you get the information about the latest attempts with social media, or how do you find out?
I think so. I think there is an icon there that you can get onto the website, and then it'll get onto the My Year of Faith.
Yeah, MyYearOfFaith.com, right. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And and then it also explains how people can purchase the app, which is only 99 cents, so that's good. And it really is a response to Pope Benedict's call to use the new media and technology for the new evangelization. And we've been getting so much feedback, so I think a lot of people, I mean, I think thousands are on this and checking it out. What I like about it, too, is it's a daily thing, so that people who have it get these daily reflections on the faith. And it's a way to really keep this at the forefront, not just, you know, periodically, but every day. And there's a lot of good catechetical content on the website and, you know, on the mobile app.
Well, what's neat is you've got, I'm looking at the website, MyYearOfFaith.com, is you have different topics for different days. Yesterday you had something on, obviously, the Feast of St. Nicholas, and today you've got something on restoration from exile. So there's different reflections for each day. And then at the top of the website on the banner, it says mobile, about, and then pray. So it gives you, as you said, the opportunity to get the app right there at the top
exactly.
of the page. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's such a variety of things. So I think it keeps it interesting. Like every day, like sometimes the focus would be on maybe some teaching from the catechism or the saint of the day or something from the scriptures of the day. So there's a lot of variety, and we have a lot of people who are, you know, writing these. I've done some. I did one in November for the Feast of All Saints. And it's a way, really, to engage our people daily in deepening their relationship with Christ.
You said you've gotten a lot of feedback, Your Excellency. What type of feedback? What are you hearing?
All positive, because I guess because of the world of social communication, it spreads so quickly. So we have people way beyond our diocese who have purchased the app or go on the website from other countries, from many other parts of the United States as well. So it's really gone beyond our expectations on the popular level. So these have become available to a very wide public, and I'm hopeful that, you know, this kind of thing, you know, we can continue. Here in my diocese, this all really began maybe a year or two ago, where three young men designed that app that got a lot of news.
It was the confession app? Yeah.
Yes.
And how the media, we have to talk about that, because that just drove me nuts. The media saying that you can confess over the phone now, it's like, yeah, right, mm-hmm, sure.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And the app that they made is wonderful because it helps one make a good examination of conscience.
Yes.
According to one's age and state of life, and it really is very creative. And of course, there's no one can go to confession over it. It's called a confession app, but it's about preparing for confession and learning more about the sacrament and the grace of the sacrament.
Well, it's just the same as if you had a piece of hard copy paper. Let's say you printed something up from a Catholic website, or you had something from the Catechism that talked about confession, and you're sitting there waiting to go into confessional, and you're praying, and you're doing your examination of conscience, or you wrote a list down on paper. If you have an iPhone, you have the availability to get that online. There is no difference. It's an availability to help you, you know, practice the sacrament effectively. It's not confessing over the phone.
That's right. That's right. And I know a lot of people have benefited from that app, because it gets people thinking too. You know, people who perhaps haven't been to confession for a long time or are uncomfortable and don't even realize how to go to confession. So so I think it has really been helpful. And sometimes when I meet a person like that, I'll say, why don't you check out this app? You know. So it's been very fruitful.
When you first started in your priesthood, did you ever think we'd get to the day where we have so many different means? I mean, we had radio and whatnot when you and I were growing up. We're not that old. I think we're
That's
close
right.
to the same age, but we didn't have, you know, 250 or 600 channels and apps and, you know, blogs and all this stuff. Did you ever think you'd have such an availability to preach the gospel?
No, I never imagined it. I never... Yeah, this was all new to me, and I was ordained a priest in 1983, and of course it was all print media, basically, certainly television, radio too, but even then we didn't have Catholic radio stations, which is such a blessing. And I know a lot of people who, you know, we have Catholic radio here in my diocese, and so
Redeemer
I think
really radio.
Have to use
yep.
all of them. Mm-hmm. Redeemer, right? Mm-hmm. Wonderful radio station. Yeah.
Wonderful people there. They carry our shows, and we greatly appreciate them. We've got a great team. Let's talk a little bit about the bishops. I ran a story this morning, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, but wonderful Archbishop of San Francisco, Archbishop Corleone, announcing in a statement yesterday this whole new effort that the bishops are going to have another Fortnight for Freedom next summer, and there's going to be a renewed push for prayer for life, and that sounds exciting.
It is, and we had that presentation at our meeting, bishops' meeting in Baltimore in November, and I was very excited when I knew about it because the committee, Archbishop Cordeleone's, is a subcommittee under a committee that I chair on laity, marriage, family life, and youth. So it's vitally important that we keep these issues at the forefront, sanctity of life, the truth about marriage, and of course the defense of our religious liberty, and the biggest weapon we have is prayer. So for these initiatives and penance, you know, I think sometimes we forget about the efficacy of penance. So asking people to voluntarily abstain from meat on Fridays, I think is a very good initiative. The holy hours and rosary and all the different things we're promoting, it not only keeps this in the forefront of our people's attention, but also puts the focus where it needs to be first and foremost, and that is our prayer.
How are the people in the church doing, you think, after the election? We took a lot of hits, obviously, especially in family and in the pro-life areas and in marriage. What would you say to folks who are still just kind of reeling? Because it was just over a month ago that, you know, we got the news of the election results.
Yeah, you know, I think it's been very difficult for us. And, you know, I think, you know, just as one example, the first time that by popular vote, same-sex marriage being approved in a few states, that to me was seemed a major defeat. At the same time, we can never lose hope, you know. I mean, we're in Advent, the season of hope. And it's just a call, I think, to recognize the increasing secularism mm-hmm. and relativism of our culture and to persevere in our faith during these difficult times. Persevere in teaching the truth, always with charity. And informing our people, you know, education in the faith, especially our young people. Because it is a cultural shift that we've seen, and what I would call a moral decline.
We've got Barbara calling on line one, and she has a really good question about the Freedom of Religion campaign, which she's actually working on. Hey, Barbara, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, Teresa. Good to talk to you. And I'm so glad to hear what the bishop has to say. I left New York. I was out in Fort Wayne recently because my brothers lived there, and I was out there visiting. And, you know, in New York, we're starting the Parish Freedom of Religion groups, and I'm hoping that one of my brothers might get in touch with the bishop's office there to discuss possibly starting the Catholics for Freedom of Religion in some parishes in that diocese. Also here in New York, we're working on something very exciting. We have an opportunity to present to the principals of the Catholic high schools here our suggestions for education in the schools for freedom of religion mm-hmm. from a constitutional basis and emphasizing freedom of religion. And I'm wondering if the bishop thinks that that kind of thing might have some place in the education in the Catholic schools there in his diocese.
Thank you, Barbara. I think both are wonderful ideas. If your brother wants to contact me about that, I'd be most happy. As far as the schools, you know, I think that is also a great idea. I'm not quite sure in our curriculum for our Catholic high schools where that. I mean, that could come in with social studies and religion, and I think that's a very good suggestion. I'd like to talk to my principals about it because I'm not quite sure how that's treated. But now's the opportune time, and then to apply it to what we're facing today.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that excellent suggestion.
Okay, Barbara, you got your marching orders. Call your brother and have him call the bishop.
I absolutely will do that. Thank you very much, and thank you for all the information.
You're welcome, Barbara. Keep
God bless
work.
You.
Yeah,
thank you.
That is something too to get the kids in terms of the catechesis, obviously on their faith, Your Excellency, but also as Barbara said, to help them have a really good understanding of our history as a country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of reading on that period of our country with the formation of the Constitution, et cetera. I enjoy history, but it's really amazing to see the when you read the founding fathers and the importance that they attach to freedom of religion, and it's just important that we not forget those roots.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's amazing when you actually do read the documents how much people don't know and how we don't realize what we have protecting us. It just doesn't get out there. The information doesn't get out there. Well, thank you so much for all that you do. So we've got MyYearOfFaith.com. Anything else in your diocese going on in terms of the specific evangelization efforts?
We have the Arise Together in Christ program that we just initiated this fall, and that forms small Christian communities that come together for prayer and for sharing their faith. And it's really... we've had a very large response to that, a lot of people. But I see those small communities as also great avenues to invite the non-practicing to come, because you know, it allows them to, on a more personal level, perhaps become re-engaged.
Yeah, great idea. Bishop, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Know how busy you are. God love you. And tell everyone in the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend, we'll say hello, especially our friends at Redeemer Radio. Bishop Kevin Rhodes, and check out MyYearOfFaith.com, some great new evangelization tools in the Year of Faith, MyYearOfFaith.com.
Catholic Connection is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Faith, family, and the culture of life. It's Family Man with Catholic therapist Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. We've all heard that childhood saying, but is it true? A new study from the University of Florida says no. It turns out that non-physical types of bullying, such as name-calling, shunning, and gossiping, can have long-lasting negative effects on victims. The study asked young adults to describe the degree to which they'd encountered this kind of so-called soft bullying in high school, and then evaluated participants' responses on measures of depression and anxiety. The research showed a significant relationship between the experience of soft bullying and higher risks of both depression and social anxiety in young adults. What's more, researchers found that both men and women were equally affected by their experience of soft bullying, and both reported similar degrees of depression and social anxiety that resulted directly from being treated shabbily by peers in childhood. If your child is complaining about being hurt by the words or actions of classmates, take it seriously. Talk to the teacher. Help your child develop good coping skills. And if you're stuck, seek the help of a faithful counselor. I'm Dr. Gregory Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
You've been listening to Family Man with Catholic therapist Dr. Gregory Popchak. To discover more resources for living an abundant life, including books, CDs, and Catholic counseling services, visit us online at exceptionalmarriages.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
How to defend the faith without raising your voice, civil responses to Catholic hot button issues, by our guest Dr. Austin Ivory, co-founder and director of Catholic Voices, a British writer, campaigner, and commentator on religious and political affairs, who regularly appears on TV and radio. Is a PhD in politics from Oxford and a London University MA in canon law, and a former deputy editor of the intellectual Catholic weekly The Tablet. Well, Doctor, this is a very, very timely topic, especially here right now in the United States. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's very nice to be with you.
All right. So here's the $50,000 question. How do we defend our faith, especially without raising our voices in this time and place that we're in right now, that we find ourselves in this world, especially if you're like me, 100% Italian-American? That is a problem, Doctor, I must say, sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm not sure about being Italian-American, but we all face the problem as Catholics now that we live in cultures where there's a kind of an orthodoxy, there's an assumption about what is right, and the Church very often seems scandalous to that sensibility, which is why the Church so often ends up in the news and why there's so much conversation around the office water coolers. So, I mean, the answer to your question is the way we put across the Church's teaching and positions without raising our voice, without being defensive, without being aggressive, is by actually thinking about the culture in which we live and the values in it, and we try and connect with the value behind the criticism, and we try to understand it at the same time as trying to show that where the Church is coming from is a very broad moral matrix. So the challenge is, how do we speak from actually a very broad moral matrix, which is what the Catholicism is, to a very narrow one, which is what our culture has become, in which autonomy, for example, is enshrined above other values. So what's in this book is the fruit of us thinking about all this in Britain in preparation for the papal visit, when we were getting ready to put the Church's case on all the really contentious issues that were likely to come up on radio and TV.
Well, actually, it went better than many people thought, didn't it, when the Holy Father came to Great Britain?
Well, it was an absolutely astonishingly successful visit, not least because of the contrast between the, you know, the pessimism, if you like, before it and what happened after it. So, in other words, the build-up to it was unusually negative. And so the contrast between the myth that people had, the mythical idea that people had of the Pope, and the reality as soon as he arrived was very, very dramatic. And I think that's what helped Pope Benedict to conquer British hearts and minds. But, I mean, a big part of, actually, the success of the papal visit was that there was quite an organized group opposed to the Pope. It was called Protest the Pope. And it brought together a number of, you know, secularists, atheists, activists, human rights activists, gay rights activists, and so on, who actually had quite a sophisticated campaign, and they would almost daily issue a kind of a new accusation against the Church. And because we, in Catholic Voices, had got ready for that, a lot of airtime before the Pope arrived. So people were actually really engaged in the issues even before he touched down.
That's very, very important, very crucial. The interesting thing, though, and I'm sure you find this in your part of the world as well, is that we are dealing with a reality out there, let's say, that isn't based on reality. What is put out about church teaching is, if not misunderstood, often just, quite frankly, false. They want to present a certain image and put certain information out there about the church. And so people, you're trying to discuss these issues without raising your voice, as it goes to the title of your book, but at the same time, while you're in discussion, half of the time has to be re-educating people for the first time on what the church actually teaches versus what people assume based on this false reality the church teaches.
That is exactly right, Teresa, and actually the important thing is that the conversations we have need to get to the point where we can say, look, this is actually the truth, this is the reality. The problem is getting to that point, because very often people shut down in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And Catholics very often begin their answers without understanding the criticism of the Church and understanding the value behind it, which is very often actually a Christian value. It's been distorted or exaggerated, but it's nonetheless a Christian one. And they unconsciously, without realizing, find themselves in opposition to that value, and so the listener simply shuts down. I mean, this is all quite abstract. Let's just give you an example. I mean, a very classic one, really, the last few years, which is AIDS and condoms. So the perception of the Church's position is that in order to defend a dogmatic position on contraception and humani vitae, the Church is willing for millions of Africans to die,
right.
needless deaths, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what is the criticism behind the Church? The criticism behind the Church is actually the same one that's made against the Pharisees, you know, that they put kind of dogma and religions on before human lives. So you have to, in your answer on AIDS, you have to show very quickly that the Church actually, which is the truth, deeply cares about saving people's lives. And in fact, we are talking, and then enable the conversation to get on to what the most effective way of doing that is. So that you're not, now, I've been in many, many interviews, and in Catholic Voices, we've been in many debates, and this actually works very well. It's the technique or the method that's explained in the book. It requires preparation and thinking about, but it actually is quite dramatic, because people go, I see. Right, so you're not saying, no. And then, you know, you can begin to have the information discussion, which is what you're talking about.
So what's your suggestion? You only have about a minute, so we can answer this and you come back. But think about this during the break, Doctor. How do you handle, let's say if you're already entered, because it seems like the minute you talk about these hot-button issues, whether it be gay marriage or abortion, right away it escalates to a shouting match. It doesn't even seem to be an opportunity, really, for calm and civil discussion, because is it best to back out? Is it better to wait? I mean, quickly, when the situation is already escalated, when tensions are already there, what's the best strategy, do you think?
I think the strategy is always to understand the value that is being defended in the criticism of the Church, because the defensiveness, the escalation, as you call it, the escalation of tension happens. And by the way, Catholics are just as prone to do this as anybody else, because you feel that what is most dear to you is under attack.
Right.
If you can show that you too care about the value that, you know, the other's trying to defend, then that will reduce the tension and open up the dialogue immediately.
And so the book will have examples of how to engage in conversation. What else will we find in the book?
Well, the book is really, the substance of the book is all the different issues. So equality and religious freedom, homosexuality and contraception, AIDS and condoms, all the hot-button controversial issues are there. And each chapter begins with the case against the church, and it also spends some time trying to understand what we call the positive intention, what is the value, and then a discussion, of course, of the facts and the background and the detail and so on, and then ending with a number of key messages. What's also in the book is a series of principles, which is really what we learned doing this.
Okay, hang on, Doctor. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll resume in about 2 minutes talking with Dr. Ivory about his book, How to Defend the Faith Without Raising Your Voice. If you have a question, 877-573-7825. We'll be right back.
How are the people of God, the church, related to religions who have yet to receive the gospel? According to the Catholic Catechism, the church is linked to the Jewish religion. The Jews were the first to hear the word of God. The Jewish faith is already a response to God's revelation in the Old Covenant. To the Jews belong the patriarchs, the sonship, the giving of the law, the worship, and the promises. Of their race, according to the flesh, is the Christ, for the gifts, says the Catechism, and the call of God are irrevocable. The Muslims are related to the church in that they acknowledge the Creator, profess to hold the faith of Abraham, and adore the one merciful God, mankind's judge on the last day. The Church's bond with other non-Christian religions stems from the common belief in the origin and end of the human race, which in both cases is our Creator God. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. Catholics and many others around the country have lost a bit of faith, hope, and joy after this year's election. We want to chart a new course. Ave Maria Radio is sponsoring a day-long conference on Saturday, January 12th in Southeast Michigan called Catholic Witness in a Nation Divided. The focus will be ecclesial, that is, focused on the church, not politics. We'll talk about marriage, religious freedom, immigration, and, of course, the life issues. We can best serve this nation by building the church first. Build the church and bless the nation. The conference will be again on Saturday, January 12th from 9 to 5 at the Grand Ballroom of the Student Center at Eastern Michigan University. And speakers will include Gerald Bradley, Bill May, Father Frank Pavone, Deal Hudson, Father Robert Sirico, Dick Thompson, Monica Miller, Teresa Tomeo, Kevin Appleby. And if you want more information and tickets, go to AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net or 734-358-9876.
Funding abortions is not just a political question.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Most of the news surrounding the cost of abortion concerns taxpayer funding, but some abortion advocates raise money to help women pay for abortions. The group Fund Abortion Now equates funding an abortion with giving a woman a second chance. They say it recognizes that, quote, women's lives matter. Completely missing from this reasoning, of course, is any mention of the other life affected by the decision to abort. Sadly, giving a woman what this group calls a second chance means denying her unborn baby any chance at all.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
How to defend the faith without raising your voice, civil responses for Catholic hot button issues, Dr. Austin Ivory. Of course, he is English, but his work in this particular book and his work with Catholic Voices, of course, is to help us right now in the culture in the United States and everything that we're dealing with. Doctor, I was telling you there's a new report that just came out examining hostility, religious hostility in our country. It says there's been a radical shift in the culture's worldview of religion, and it's taking impact here in the United States, as you well know, with the Family Research Council announcing more than 600 recent examples of religious hostility in the U.S., most occurring in the last 10 years. And the release that they put out says a survey also documenting an explosion within the last decade of cases involving local governments discriminating against churches, especially in the local government's use of zoning laws and granting of permits. And you were probably aware of what happened 2 weeks ago with the Chick-fil-A controversy, where a Christian man who runs this business, this fast food restaurant chain, was being interviewed by a Baptist media outlet and was asked about his opinion on marriage. And he talked about the biblical definition of marriage and it went viral, it went crazy, and all of a sudden he was, you know, public enemy number one.
He was vilified.
It was insane. It was the worst case I've seen lately. Go ahead.
There are more and more of these cases.
Yeah.
And what we're dealing with is that what's happening is that the idea of tolerance and equality has been enshrined, if you like, as a kind of a dogma, a sacred value. Now, religious people, according to this ethic, religious people, when they make arguments, they're making religious arguments. They can't make arguments from reason because they're religious. That's the assumption.
Right.
And therefore, while we can respect individual religious narratives, what we can't do is allow them to make any claim to truth about the common good. And to the extent that they try to, they are fundamentalist, dogmatic, they must be resisted, they must be chased out of the public square.
We're legalistic, we're not pastoral enough, yada, yada, yada.
And you see, what you've got is then the justification then to label what are considered by the culture to be religiously informed views as basically heretical, that they have no place. And that then allows you then to make them illegal or indeed to stop funding. We saw it here in Britain, and I know you've had it there in Massachusetts as well, with the closure of the adoption agencies, where adoption agencies who said, no, we actually do think that a man and a woman are necessary for the health of the upbringing of a child, that then becomes labeled heretical, they get deprived of funding and vilified. And that is just the way things are at the moment. I think Pope Benedict saw this, you know, a few years ago when he first started talking about the dictatorship of relativism, and a lot of us said, what on earth does that mean, and how that sounds like a paradox. And of course, now we understand it, I think, increasingly more and more. And so we have to understand that this is the context. We have to understand that there is often a vehement hostility directed actually at a Christian, at a Catholic who just stands up and describes them. Now, it's very important that we don't react to that in a way that simply fuels the cycle. We have to learn how to break out of that cycle to demonstrate the narrowness of the charges that are being directed against us and the narrowness of the views on which this rests and break out into something broader. That's the challenge.
Well, I think we have to, you know, start calling people out on this and say, well, wait a minute, you're the one who actually is intolerant because the only views you accept are yours.
Well, exactly. And also what we have to demonstrate is that the idea of victims is very, very selective. And of course Christians in this view cannot be victims, you know. Which is why, of course, religious persecution stories get so little reported in the Western press, because it doesn't fit, you know, the idea of the Christians and the church as victims. Of course, probably what's going to need to happen is some kind of a persecution in the West of the Church, which I suppose is underway, really. We're seeing the beginnings of it, you know, for that to happen. Because at the moment, there is no, it just doesn't fit the idea of Christians as victims.
Also, I think that what Catholic Voices is doing, Kim Daniels was on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about your efforts, which are so, so crucial in helping prominent Catholics who are out there in the public square learn how to express themselves well and articulate the message well in the media.
What we think we're developing, and I hope it doesn't sound too immodest, but I think what we're helping to develop here is what we might call a new apologetics for the new evangelization.
Mm-hmm.
So if the new evangelization is all about how to speak to a culture which is effectively post-Christian, in which actually the accusation against the church are often come from a kind of distorted Christian perspective. So a new apologetics is the front line of that new evangelization. So, you know, we're not evangelizing directly, but by going on TV and radio, and by the way, the book is written for people not just who are going to go and do interviews, but also who are going to have conversations around the water cooler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have to learn to engage our society precisely in those contentious issues, because that's where the action is. That's where people are turning towards Catholics and the Church and saying, how can you believe that? How can you justify that? We have to learn to be comfortable in that space and not to run away from it. And this book is really designed to help people just inhabit that space and be comfortable. In fact, to welcome it as an opportunity to put the Church's case compellingly and humanly and succinctly.
How important is it to be able to draw from examples in society and research that back up Church teaching without, let's say, quoting a particular document? For example, if we look at the increase in sexually transmitted diseases, still at epidemic proportions in this country, or something as you know, interesting as an article that was in the July-August Atlantic Monthly, where a former member of the White House administration, a very liberal woman, actually left her very, very high position in the State Department because she felt that she needed to be there as well as her husband to raise her kids. And in the article, she's actually saying, look, my husband and I both bring different things to the table, so it's important for us to both be there. Not only do I need to be there, but I want to be there, which is really a very Catholic position in terms of the female-male complementarity, even if she doesn't know she's saying this. So I try to do that. I try to say, oh, this is a really neat article. Did you see what so-and-so said about the importance of a man and a woman involved in raising children?
And of course, what you're doing there is you're saying, when we as Catholics speak, we're not speaking out of some kind of sectarian minority viewpoint, which happens to have these strange views inherited over many thousands of years, but actually we're speaking out of a common humanity, yeah, and we care about the common good. We care about what is most fulfilling for people. We believe in fulfilled human lives. And the spirit, I think, of our project, and Teresa, what you do and so on, I think is quite well captured by that phrase, affirmative orthodoxy, used especially Pope Benedict and Cardinal Dolan, which is that, yeah, it's about restating Catholic truth, but in a way that connects with people's desires, and which is basically positive and life-affirming. It's very easy to end up as Catholics in contemporary culture as people who say no, you know? Mm-hmm. But actually, when we say no, we are actually saying no because we're trying to say yes to
exactly.
something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And Cardinal Dolan's very good on this, isn't he? He says, you know, I want to be a church that says yes. And I think we have to learn to be there too. Precisely because we are more and more embattled, we have to make an extra effort not to be embattled. We have to make an extra effort to be positive and to connect. That's really what good communication is, and it's absolutely vital for this new evangelization.
And, you know, Pope Benedict has a great quote that I use a lot where he said, the Ten Commandments are not a series of no's to love and life, but actually a big yes to love and life.
Exactly right. And so, yeah, when we're talking about, I don't know, euthanasia, whether it's assisted suicide, whatever the issue is, we need to be saying we're not here people who wish to restrict freedom. We're not trying to impose suffering. We don't believe, you know, we believe in relieving suffering. That's why Christians have pioneered the hospice movement, which is all about the relief of palliative suffering. Nobody should have to suffer unnecessarily and alone. You know, but we what we don't believe is taking some kind of shortcut out of that process in the illusion that we can somehow end suffering, because actually it's going to lead to more suffering and so on.
Right.
So, you know, we start always from the what is human, what is life-giving, what is affirming, what is positive, and we show that our no's are part of that bigger yes.
Well, Austin, thanks so much. God bless you for your work, continued work, not only here in the United States and England, but all around the world. The book is How to Defend the Faith Without Raising Your Voice, from Our Sunday Visitor, our guest, Dr. Austin Ivory.
All priests, deacons, and seminarians are invited to a special Year of Faith retreat at Ave Maria University in sunny Southwest Florida. Join clergy from around the country January 14th through the 16th for daily mass, dynamic speakers, and restful contemplation. The cost is $150 and includes a registration fee and meals. Visit avemaria.edu and look under News and Events for more information, or call 239-348-4724, 239-348-4724.
Don't miss the car loan trade-in sale going on right now at Catholic Vantage Financial and Michigan Catholic Credit Union. Most people think they already have a good rate for their car loan, but not everyone realizes that they can do even better at a Catholic Credit Union. Our rates are so low that people are bringing us their car loan from other lenders. Not only will you save money, but you'll be part of a credit union that gives back to your Catholic community. At Michigan Catholic Credit Union and Catholic Vantage Financial, we can help to lower your monthly payment so that you can keep more money in your wallet and put a smile on your face. To find out more, visit mycatholiccu.org or visit Catholic Vantage Financial or Michigan Catholic Credit Union today. If you're Catholic, it's where you belong. New loans only, membership eligibility required, federally insured by NCUA.
This is Vanessa Denha-Garmo. Join me on Friday, December 28th, when I fill in for Teresa Tamio on Catholic Connection. We'll bring you a special broadcast about the Chaldean Catholic Diocese of Detroit, the largest Chaldean diocese in the world. The diocese celebrates 30 years. Bishop Ibrahim is celebrating 30 years as a bishop and 50 years as a priest. We'll talk about the Chaldean culture, its history, as well as the Eastern Rite Church. You won't want to miss it. Friday, December 28th, from 8 to 10 in the morning on Catholic Connection.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Coming up at the National Interdenominational Pro-Life Prayer Service to be held on the 40th Memorial of Roe v. Wade, the National Pro-Life Religious Council to be presenting its Pro-Life Recognition Award to two outstanding pro-life warriors, including our guest, Reggie Littlejohn. She's the president, of course, of Women's Rights Without Frontiers, and an award will also be going to Michael Schwartz, longtime pro-life leader and strategist. Now, Reggie, as Father Frank says in this press release, leads an international coalition that fights human trafficking and sexual slavery around the world. She also works very hard to end China's forced abortion policy and to expose violations of women's rights everywhere. She was one of the first who brought the attention of many pro-life leaders and other Americans the plight of Chen Guangcheng, who was imprisoned and tortured in China for his opposition to forced abortion. Reggie, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate your work. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, I think it's there's so many questions I have for you. How did you first get involved in bringing these situations to light?
I'm an attorney, and in the mid-90s, I represented a Chinese refugee in her case for political asylum in the United States. She had been forcibly sterilized, and what I mean by that is she was this tiny woman, and like 12 cadres literally dragged her out of her home, screaming and crying and pleading, and strapped her down to a table, and cut her open and tied her fallopian tubes without any anesthesia. And then she was permanently disabled from that. She had chronic back aches, chronic abdominal pain, and chronic migraines for the rest of her life. And I, at the time, knew that China had a one-child policy, but I had no idea that it is currently enforced through forced abortion, forced sterilization.
Now, you've done a lot to bring this into the forefront, but how much coverage is it getting in the rest of the world in the secular arena, do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, there are times when it breaks through. One was in the recent forced abortion of a woman named Feng Jiangmei, which Women's Rights Without Frontiers brought up to the West. She was forcibly aborted at 7 months in June. And there was a very appalling photograph of her lying next to her forcibly aborted baby. We broke that news to the West. It went viral. And the European Parliament actually passed a resolution condemning forced abortion in China. And the other time when news about it broke to the secular media was, as you mentioned, we led the International Coalition to Free the Blind Activist Chen Guangcheng. And when he made his James Bond escape from house detention, that went viral and was definitely picked up by the West. It was on the front page of the Drudge Report, like the lead article in the Drudge Report for a couple days, I think it was.
Do you still see this issue getting more attention based on his case? And are you able to break through? I mean, and, you know, we're with you here in the pro-life media and the Catholic and the other Christian and conservative media, but I really think that so many people are so misled and misinformed about abortion in general. Are you able to get through with more stories on this?
Well, yes. Like recently, Chen Guangcheng was given an award by a secular human rights organization, Human Rights First, and Christian Bale, the actor, presented the award. Now, Christian Bale had tried to visit Chen Guangcheng while Chen was still under house arrest in China and was physically, like, punched and thrown out of the village. So that brought a lot of visibility to Chen's case and Chen's issue, which is forced abortion. And Christian Bale very bravely said that Chen's issue is forced abortion, and he said that women are forcibly aborted all the way up to the ninth month of pregnancy. And he said this is true horror. So you know, I really am thankful to him for pointing out what Chen's issue is and stating this is wrong.
Now, you also had a documentary that you presented. I'm looking at your press release that was posted actually on November 8th, and this is all about sex selection and what's really going on. It's a Girl, and you presented this at the European Parliament with the film's director. How did that go?
Well, and that's another thing that has broken through to the Western or to the secular media, the mainstream media, is that the film It's a Girl was featured at the Amnesty International Film Festival in Toronto. And the approach that I've taken is that it doesn't matter whether you're pro-life or pro-choice on the issues of forced abortion. Any organization that says they're pro-choice has to be opposed to forced abortion because it's not a choice. And by the same token, the sex selective abortion of baby girls, any organization that says that they care about women's rights has got to oppose the fact that there are up to 200 million women missing in the world today due to sex-selective abortion. And yes, I presented the film at the European Parliament, also at the British Parliament in London, and in both places. In London, it was standing room only, and in the European Parliament, it was filled a large auditorium, and people were extremely receptive to the message. People just don't know. People don't realize that that today in the 21st century, women are being dragged out of their homes and strapped down to tables and forced to abort babies up to the ninth month of pregnancy. And they don't realize that baby girls are being routinely aborted either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But see, that's the point. I mean, this issue, this is what I've always argued, and I debated some pro-abortion activists in Michigan earlier this year. I said, if you're really, quote-unquote, all about choice, how come you're not talking about these things? And how come you're working hand-in-hand with countries like China in terms of population control? It's craziness.
Well, and that's exactly right. So, you know, what I've been telling you is sort of the highlight of when the issue has broken through into the mainstream media. But generally, they're silent on it. And so then that makes you wonder, if they don't oppose forced abortion and they say they stand for choice, what do they really stand for? Because clearly it's not choice, otherwise they would be jumping up and down about this.
Well, I'm sure you were familiar with earlier this year when Lila Rose exposed the sex selection issues that were going on at Planned Parenthood. And first Planned Parenthood denied it existed, and they came back out and said that they wouldn't, I forget the exact quote that they have, but they did have a statement just saying that they wouldn't be totally against this. It's craziness, but again, it doesn't get out there enough. I'm going to read your quote from your press release. It's significant that the European Parliament has urged the Commission to ensure this funding is not associated with coercion. You're talking about the funding of UNFPA and Planned Parenthood. For decades, UNFPA and International Planned Parenthood Federation have worked hand-in-hand with the Chinese population control machine, which is coercive. They are funded by many nations, and only in Europe, but the world over, including the United States. I have no doubt you said that any unbiased investigation by the European Parliament or any other government body will reveal that these organizations are complicit with coercive family planning in China. Now, what kind of reaction did you get to that when you made that statement?
Well, I didn't really get much of a reaction. I think that... you know, that it's very difficult to try to break through and get people to react to this. Now, there is in terms of the general public, in terms of the United States Congress and the European Parliament, I do feel that lawmakers react to these statements. As you stated, the European Parliament actually said in their resolution that they want to ensure that their money is not going to organizations that are complicit with coercion. And in the United States Congress, we have been able to reduce the funding to the UNFPA based on the argument that they are complicit with coercive family planning. Now, former Secretary of State Colin Powell actually issued a report finding that the UNFPA is complicit with forced abortion in China, and that's why the Bush administration cut off funding of that organization.
So what else can we do, the average person listening, to make a difference here?
Well, we have a new campaign called Save a Girl, and it's the official action campaign for the It's a Girl film. And we are literally saving lives of babies in China. And what we do is we have a network inside of China that identifies women who are pregnant with girls, they've had an ultrasound, and who are planning to abort them, or who just gave birth to a girl and are planning to leave her out and to die in the field. This is part of the gendercide in China. And we've gone and said, look, keep your daughter. Don't abort her. Don't abandon her. And we will give you monthly support for a year to help you with this girl. And in every case, women have kept their daughters, and we are saving lives in China. So if people want to come and support that campaign, just get on my website, and it's the first thing you see on there is the Save a Girl campaign. That's something that people can do if they want to directly save lives in China.
Reggie, we were chatting during the break, and I was telling you a situation that's so frustrating for me here in my home state of Michigan, where pro-life leaders are working very hard to get passage of a number of bills that would protect women or do a better job of protecting women. Now, obviously, the pro-lifers are not shy about saying they want to end abortion, but in the meantime, trying to limit the harm that's done. Most people don't know that in many states, these abortion facilities are not even up to the basic health standards and regulations. And so women are, you know, in harm's way in more than one way, obviously, with the abortion, the life of the baby, and the dangers that come from an abortion. But we also have a bill that is on the table right now regarding coercive abortions, trying to prevent and help women in the sense that if they go in, they're asked a question if they were pressured. Now, we know the statistics show that many women, a good portion of women who undergo an abortion, say they were pressured to do so either by a spouse, either by a boyfriend, by an economic situation. They were told they'd be kicked out of the house, a parent, whatever. It's so hypocritical to me that these people, as you said earlier, who are supposed to be all about choice, fight to the death, no pun intended, against these types of measures.
Well, it's complete hypocrisy. If you say that you're in favor of choice, you should be absolutely opposed to forced abortion. And so if you don't oppose forced abortion, then do you really stand for choice or do you stand for something else? And the thing also that is very troubling is that sex selective abortion mm-hmm. is coming to our land, and the sex selective abortion is worse in China and India, and in those populations in both the United States and Canada, the number of boys born is elevated to the point where it could only happen through sex selective abortion. And one of the things I tell people is that some people will defend sex selective abortion as saying, well, a woman has a choice to end a pregnancy for any reason, including the fact that it's a girl. But there is a significant connection between sex selective abortion and coercion, because most of these women, and this is demonstrated in the It's a Girl film, most of the women who have sex selective abortions are pressured into it, including with violence up to and including death, if they will not abort their baby girls.
Hmm.
So sex selective abortion and forced abortion are related, and they should be opposed on all fronts.
I don't think you're on Planned Parenthood's Christmas card list, are you?
You know, no, I'm not on.
Not that they send out a Christmas card. 2 years ago, what was it? A choice on earth. It was a couple of years ago, that ridiculous card. But what kind of reaction have you gotten from Planned Parenthood? What are they saying? And what kind of feedback do you get from, you know, those who are supporting all these different things?
Well, it's interesting because a couple of years ago, a former Planned Parenthood executive wrote that he felt that the United States should have a one-child policy. And I wrote a press release, you know, hugely criticizing him for this and challenging Planned Parenthood, International Planned Parenthood, to repudiate his remark, and also pointing out the fact that on the Planned Parenthood website, International Planned Parenthood website for China, they said that they felt that the family planning program in China was appropriate for that country. And meanwhile, all these reports of coercion were coming out of there. Well, number one, they did not repudiate his comment. So that means what? That they agree with it?
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, they removed the wording from their website so that it no longer says that. But it says that they are promoting voluntarism in China. And my question for them is, if they are indeed promoting voluntarism in China, then how come they are silent when horrible things happen, like the forced abortion at 7 months of Feng Jiangmei? Why is Planned Parenthood completely silent about this if they're promoting voluntarism? I don't believe them.
No, I don't either. All right, let's go to the phones. Kathy has a question from the good state of Ohio, calling in on line one. If you have a question, 877-573-7825. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning. I just wondered if I would give money for to save a baby girl in China. How do I know my money is actually used for that baby?
Well, your money is not actually used for that baby because we don't have a. It's not like you're sponsoring a particular baby in China. I sponsor a baby in Africa, in Uganda, and there, you know, you're allowed to see the baby or the child. They write you a letter every year, et cetera, et cetera. You can't do that in China because these women are at risk. We can't even give the money to them openly. So we certainly can't be sending people like a photograph and a name of their baby over the internet. But what I can tell you is that all of the money that is given to the Save a Baby campaign is going towards saving babies in China, and we've got, you know, an accounting system, et cetera. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, which means that our books are open to the U.S. government. We file a report every year about how our money is spent, just like every other nonprofit.
I see. Thank you very much.
Okay, Kathy, and don't forget to check out the website, womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. This whole thing of women's rights has taken on like a whole life of its own, and so many of our real rights are ignored, Reggie.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Well, I mean, one of the things, again, that that the pro-choice movement is ignoring is that it is a woman's right to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they talk about reproductive rights. What about the right that women have to have a baby?
That's never included in that discussion, ever.
That's right. That's right. So that's one of the things that we're saying. We are the real women's rights organization, in my opinion. We stand for the right of women to plan their families and have their children if they want them. Another thing that is never discussed is the whole idea of reproductive health. I got to tell you, there is nothing worse for a woman's reproductive health than a forced sterilization. These women are butchered. There was a woman who a couple years ago was forcibly aborted at 9 months during the procedure, okay? When she woke up, they had removed her cervix, her uterus, and one of her ovaries. She went from being a successful business owner in China to being completely disabled. She is wheelchair-ridden now and dependent on her elderly mother to take care of her. So her entire life has been destroyed. Not even just her health, but her life has been destroyed by this forced sterilization. How come these women's reproductive health organizations aren't jumping up and down about forced sterilization?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, when you're in Washington for the March on Life events, will you be doing any talks in addition to receiving your award?
Well, yes. Father Frank Pavone has said I'm going to be able to speak when I get the award. So I'm going to be showing our video. And this
great.
Is another thing that people should watch. Is that we have a four-minute video. It's the first thing you see on the website called Stop Forced Abortion, China's War on Women, which shows the truth about forced abortion. I would highly recommend that video and forwarding it to your friends.
Well, I'd love to talk to you. I'm going to be covering the event for EWTN Television, so it would be great if we could meet up with you and hopefully do an interview to expose more of this. So, Reggie, God love you. Thank you for your work, and hopefully we'll see each other at the March for Life. WomensRightsWithoutFrontiers.org is the website, WomensRightsWithoutFrontiers.org.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
The preceding hour of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo is brought to you by Huron Valley Catholic School at huronvalleycatholicschool.org.
If you're looking for a great Catholic school with Christ at the center and a strong academic program, I encourage you to consider Huron Valley Catholic School. They offer pre-K through 8th grade and have been in the area for almost 30 years. They've adopted the philosophy of St. John Bosco, that the way to the mind is through the heart. You can learn more by visiting HuronValleyCatholicSchool.org.
Catholic Connection is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
My peace I give to you, said Christ, as we read in the Gospel of John. Peace be with you, the priest says during Mass. We also offer each other peace as we shake hands prior to communion. And you know the old saying, when you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. Well, how about wishing that person peace? You don't even have to say it out loud. Recite it as a quiet